about the elephant in the room here. It's a little awkward. I'm just going to get it out of the way so that we enjoy the rest of this session. Grant, why are you here? Were you not on that email chain?
But I assumed it was all just satire.
I really just thought you were here to put that 4 hours in before we started with the new audio functionality and all the new programs, and then you would just kindly excuse yourself, but you just stayed. You even did the countdown. I thought you'd get to one and just sign
disappear.
Out. But here you are.
That's the main thing. I was fine with the countdown, but I thought at some point during, you know, those last 10 seconds that his video would go away, you know, like it's supposed to, like a true producer, which is kind of vanish, and he finishes the count off.
Right.
And, you know, the people that are still in the show do the show. Mm.
Grant, let me step in here a minute. I know you're not nearly as experienced as some of us like me in having your characters die on shows. or what happens is, you know, characters you really care about, too, you know, they die, and then the next episode, you're just ruthlessly mocked for dying as if it was your fault.
Your character's dead.
So just grin and get through it. Eventually they lose interest about 20 episodes later.
I'm trying, but I did ignore the bullies at my summer camp 1 year. And after they bullied me for long enough without me responding, they're like, "You know what I hate most about you, Burger? When I make fun of you, you don't get angry." And then they covered the
and
only
they spit chewing tobacco in your face.
No, they like one
shot
night
your knee.
They got up and I was friends with this kid, and they were really mean to him. And they like two of them came out to my bed in the middle of the night, like, "Don't say a word." And then they covered him with, like, toothpaste. And then my friend, my only friend, was upset that I didn't tell him in the middle of the night. But I was going to get, like, punched in the face if I did. So they were truly some of the worst people I've ever met at Possum Kingdom.
Wow.
Camp Grady Spruce, Possum Kingdom, YMCA, one of the most affordable water skiing camps.
Oh, even my though, God. Wow.
I didn't ever do it, but there was a kid that flew in from Japan to go to summer camp there because we had a boat with water skis.
Even though this current generation is easily the worst of all time, I think it will make like this next group of people kinder in the long run. If there's one good thing that comes out of it, kinder, like, because the kids are so awful at that age. My all-boys
so
high
terrible.
School, I mean, there's stories I can't even tell on air about how horrible these kids were to me, to other people that couldn't take, I mean, just so bad. Yeah, I hope that goes away.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard for me to imagine. I don't know. My kids aren't old enough yet to go to school, and I'm sure that they're going to get so like emotionally tortured by people, and I'm going to be so angry as a parent.
It's
going to be so brutal. But I don't know if this generation is going to be like all nice and sensitive to everybody, because man, when I was a kid, like, it was tough. And the hardest part is, like, I didn't tell my parents, you know what I mean? Because, like, I was embarrassed and I felt bad, and I didn't want to, like, I don't know. I didn't want to tell my parents. So, like, I would just keep it to myself.
Yeah.
Getting bullied and stuff like that sucked.
Sucked.
Really sucked.
And you remember the bad things more than anything, which is, like, why most people leave bad reviews and not good reviews. That's the thing that stands out in their mind. I will never forget that one of the kids who was a bully was from Midlothian, Texas.
Midlothian. I have a
deep hatred for Midlothian, Texas. Because
it sounds like it's like the United States version of, like, the Abyss. It sounds like where demons come from. It's like, he come rose it's from, like, Midlothian.
It sounds like it's from Tolkien.
Yeah, it really does.
I think it's a team in the Scottish Soccer League. Midlothian.
Yeah, no, it's a region of southeast Scotland on the Firth of Forth surrounding Edinburgh.
Yeah. Do you ever look back now and, like, you know, think of, like, I wish I had the witty rejoinders that I have now when I was being bullied? Like, you want to go up to one of them and be like, "The reason you're like this is because your parents are garbage."
and then just walk away.
What? I don't know. Yeah. In my experience, witty rejoinders didn't seem to really be an effective strategy at stopping the bullying.
Yeah.
What you usually need, just made it worse.
What you need is the physical size.
Then he'd be thinking about it all day. On my past
physical size. And then go back.
Good.
I know. It really is. Like, I still to this day, because I'm just like, I'm stupid. And I still can't wrap my head around any solution other than like, you punch him in the face. Like, like I can't think of a diplomatic way out of a bully situation with a complete Neanderthal. Like, my dad used to be like, well, you just tell them one day you're going to be their boss. Because they're never going to be able to get a decent job. And you're going to finish college, blah, 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 and all that stuff. And I was just
that'll diffuse
like,
everything.
I can't. Okay, thanks, Dad. And then I'd be like, I could never say, like, I can't say that. I can't even explain what that means.
A kid can't think 2 days into the future. That wouldn't help at all.
I was like, that's the part I really don't look forward to being a parent, is that, like, every bit of useful advice I have will be totally useless.
Yes. Yes.
Totally obsolete.
It can be completely useless anymore. So what I'm relying on now is just facts. I'm having a good time with facts. Like, I don't know that they're sinking in yet, but I'm like, that's Mars. It's the next planet away from the sun. Like, that one's Venus. Like, because we could see them actually really clear on the way home from Oklahoma. And I was telling about the planets. I'm telling about how physics works and stuff like that. Because I'm just like, these are things I know that I think they're facts. And so, like, I could pass this along. But just like, social knowledge, there's nothing I can do. There's nothing we can do.
There's no advice. Just facts. Just pass on news. That's all you can
do. Just make sure they're nerds news. Early so they know their situation. They know their lot in life right away.
Yeah.
But they will know a lot of things, and that's great.
Right.
Listen, always kid. Better to know things, right?
Yeah.
Well,
well, is it like knowing things like the rules of combat? Because I saw some things about the circumstances of my death that were... little bit complainy out there. I didn't quite understand it because I never read the rules. But
I didn't read any of that. But I think it's very possible that mistakes were made in your death. And I'll tell you how much I care about that. Specifically, going into the session, I was like, I don't care at all about getting the combat mechanics exactly right because of possible character death. I was like, the possible character death element is so important. And when it happens, it happens. And it just is what it is. Like, this to me is something that I'm a big proponent in Pathfinder of, like, you stop everything and you reread the rules if you're looking at possible character death, because you do not kill a character against the rules, just like winging it on the fly. But I think completely 180 about that in Delta Green, because I just feel like everything about the fabric of these characters' existence in this world is so frail and is such thin ice that, like, it just, you can't get saved by correct rules. It just, nothing saves you.
Right.
You're utterly screwed. And going into that, you kind of know that as an agent, which is what is such a, makes it such an intense setting.
And to be very fair, I loved how you ran that combat, for the record. And I was in, during that recording, I was like, yeah, should be able to bite. It makes total sense to me that it couldn't melee, but it could bite. Like, I loved, everything fit for me. So I'm not upset at all. In case
when I was re-listening, I was editing it, and I had gotten some of those comments about particularly the crit and all that, and the dodging armor, the calling shots around armor. I don't know where I came up with that, but I swear I read something that was like, you can't use a called shot just to avoid armor. I'm looking at it. And it's like, you use a called shot to avoid armor. Like, I don't know what I read, but I flipped it 180 in my head. And I was bummed as I was listening to the edit, because I was like, I don't like getting things wrong. But I was like, this stinks, that stinks. Ultimately, like, if a pinned creature is unable to do any attack, I shouldn't have done it. But I just, in my mind, I couldn't imagine that. Pin both of his arms down. You got to be close enough to him that he can just lash out and bite you. You know what I mean? To me, it just made sense. And so I rolled with it.
I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, some common sense, I think, I always think it should override some specific rules. If you can come up with a good reason physically why a thing should be possible, then make it possible.
Right. Yeah, and ultimately, at the end of the day, we weren't trying to tell the triumphant story of Agent Riker Salas. You know what right. I mean? Like, that's not the story we're telling. We're telling a very different story. And in some ways, it seems that this operation was, I think, in a wonderful way, telling us the tragic end of Riker Salas' story in a way that will always be remembered. I'll never forget it. And when I look back at those first moments of the operation, of like Riker Salas jogging, you know, in DC and everything, about to get the call, having no idea that, you know, about 30 to 40 hours later, he'd be dead. You know, yeah. It's just crazy, but that's the job.
He really that's just should have hit the bottle again and just chilled out in his apartment that night, but yeah. Huge mistake.
Not only is he dead, but things are probably about to get a whole lot worse for him one way or another.
Yeah. Well, I'm just happy. I am happy that I had a role in saving the good doctor's life.
Yes, yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you did fantastic. I love the character. Great job. And thank you for working all the audio tonight. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks for being here. So you guys, I'll just run back real quick. So the combat was hectic. The combat was intense. It was violent. Riker Salas and Roger Cumson at the same time burst in the door of this house. And when Roger Cumson sees the body, you clear the house of other hostiles. There's nobody else here. And as Riker Salas is flipping through the pictures of this camera, he sees that this person, Francis Wei, who appears to be an amateur bird watcher, has in fact taken pictures of Marlene Bowman in the wild. And it stands to reason that she saw him because she looks right at the camera, and then what happens next is left to your imagination. So he, at the moment he sees this, the corpse of Francis Wei seems to come to life and attacks the doctor, who immediately has sort of a psychological break and is unable to, she must flee. She could fight or flee, but she fleed, and probably the smartest choice. Probably not the smartest choice, attempting over and over again to smash through the rear sliding door with a chair instead of just opening the door.
I was having a psychotic episode.
I know. It's amazing, and it was so funny. I loved it. But very, very intense. It just goes to show you how unplanned everything was. Roger Comstone keeps his cool. He fires off shots. He successfully lands shots with his weapon. He grabs an improvised weapon off the wall, an ice axe that Francis Wei has maybe from an Arctic expedition that he did, or an Alpine bird watching expedition that he did. And Geordi does his best as well, though, you know, misses a lot of shots, but then hits a key one with the ice axe that stuns the creature so that Roger Cumstone can finish it off all while in this living room. Now, before that happens, of course, the creature talks to you a little bit, because you realize this is kind of futile, and then you say, "What do you want?" The creature source seems to imply that it has some grand plan, or has been around for a very, very long time, and it sort of is like, "Just let me walk out of here," and because what does it care about you? And then that's when Geordi's like, "Forget this," and just continues the onslaught until it is destroyed. The body is destroyed. It goes down, and you're left with Roger Cumstone standing there, and we see the doctor slowly making her way back to the house as she gathers her wits about her and begins the return. As she's walking towards the house, we fade out. And fade back up to a bright, sunny day outside. A woodland area, a wooded park. But we do see some asphalt, a parking lot, maybe by the side of the road in a heavily wooded area. Birds are chirping. And we see a sign of a hiking trail, the trailhead of a hiking trail. we slowly kind of like creep toward it, and we see that there are multiple cars parked near this hiking trail. One of the cars says Ranger along the side of it. Another one says Essex County Sheriff's Department. Another one is unmarked. Dark vehicle, black vehicle. We rise up above this view to see a bird's eye view of heavy woods and a smattering of large exposed bedrock between the woods. Now we cut to a clearing near a bluff that falls off to the left side of our screen. But up above this little cliff is a gathering of what looks like uniformed officers. They're standing around with a small group of people standing around as two women in suits come walking up through this trail into the gathering. We then come close to the two women, and a younger man, uniformed police officer, looks like sheriff's department, steps up to them and says, "This way, detectives." The women reach back into their pockets and pull out rubber gloves and start snapping on rubber gloves. One of them says, "What have we got?" The young man speaks again as he walks around a small rock outcropping. Decomp. Pretty bad. Park ranger found her." One of the detectives looks over at the park ranger and gives a slight nod. He returns the nod, a note of fear in his eyes. The young man continues, "Female, mid-60s, maybe, but it's hard to tell. The animals have gotten to her." One of the women squats down beside the body. As the camera comes in close, we see she's kneeling down next to the body of Marlene Bowman, rotting in the sun. The detectives are looking over the body, surveying the scene. They start talking to each other, but we don't hear what they say. Our camera pans up to the park ranger who's watching them. He steps back a step, and then another step, and then turns and begins walking down the trail. We cut, and then we see him emerging from the trailhead and walking quickly to his car. He opens it, gets in, sits for a moment, breathing heavily, and then gathers himself. Clearly, he's shaken. He takes a deep breath and then reaches down between his legs under his seat and unclips a small flip phone from a bracket. He opens it and dials, holds the phone to his ear. And we don't hear a voice on the other end, but after a moment, he says,
"This is call sign Kilo Sierra Romeo Niner reporting. Host located but vacant. Spectre is mobile. Repeat, Spectre is mobile. Essex County remains compromised. Suggest reinitiating tracking protocols. Please advise. Over."
And we fade out. Fade up. As the doctor comes in the room, there is a pall of just, you know, this the aftershocks of violence in the room, a smell of fresh blood, the TV still on, flickering, the widescreen TV in the living room, and Roger Comstone bleeding. Geordi, who I believe hasn't taken a hit, standing there. The doctor, bleeding, comes stumbling into the room. What do you guys do?
Do I see Riker's body?
Yeah.
The doctor will immediately go to Riker's body and see if, and check his pulse and check his vitals, see if he's still with us.
Reach down, check. He's got no pulse. But you can see, I mean, there is some pulse. You're just not picking it up on his wrist because it's out of his neck. It's just bloop, bloop, bloop. Blood is just pooling in the living room.
I do whatever I can to stitch him up until I determine that he is very, very dead.
Yeah, so you put your hands over his neck, staunch the bleeding for a little bit, grab some cloth or some, whatever, his shirt, something, and cover his neck, put pressure on the wound. He's not responding. He's not breathing. You can attempt CPR if you'd like.
I would like.
Okay, so you put pressure on the wound and begin the process of, you know, on his chest, trying to keep his heart beating. But you would know as a doctor, this is your natural reaction. But the more you think about it, the more you think CPR in this situation is really, its only purpose is to keep oxygen flowing to his brain long enough for the emergency services to get there. And you start thinking to yourself, do I want to be here when emergency services gets here? So you're pumping, but this comes to your head. It's like, there's no way he's waking up while you're doing this. You could keep him alive, perhaps, even though he's got no pulse right now, but only if you wait for the EMTs. That's what I'm looking for, the EMTs to arrive.
But, like, he's pretty dead, right? Like,
Oh, yeah. He's not breathing. He's got no pulse. So, like, it's a futile effort, but it's something you might try if you knew that within 1 to 2 minutes, somebody else with equipment could get here. This CPR might save his life. But, you know, if they're not going to get here in that amount of time, if somebody's not calling 911 this instant, as a doctor, you know he's going to have brain death within 3 or 4 minutes.
The doctor will call it. He's dead.
She stands up, blood all over her hands. Blood still running down her neck, too. She has a wound that is bleeding. Not as severe. She's not bleeding out, but it's pretty severe.
Jesus. We gotta clean this up. We gotta sterilize this place. We can't leave traces of this. I don't know what to do. Not enough angel dust in the world to make this look like an actual crime scene, you know?
Comstone's standing there and just kind of, he's still got the gun in his hand. He's got his other hand on his side, kind of holding in the wound. And he's staring off into space. And he doesn't hear the talking in the room. He just hears, like, a helicopter. And sounds of bullets. And just in the background, Comstone! Comstone, get down! Comstone, get down! He zips out of it. And he's like, empty his pockets. And empty his, too. I'll be right back. I'm going to stealth outside and see if any of the neighbors seem to have heard the gunshots. Or are they, like, waking up and looking around? I don't want to stealth so I can't be seen.
What's your stealth score?
70.
Okay, you're good. You go to stealth outside and look, and immediately your worst fears are confirmed as you see multiple lights turning on that you had not seen before. I'm going to go ahead and mechanically, I'm going to roll a luck roll for the, if someone calls, and if they do, the response time, which you guys could not possibly know as characters. Mm-hmm. But at Comstone, thinking about this, it stands to reason that someone may call the police. Now, how much time you actually have is going to be based on a luck roll, in which I set aside a certain amount of time if you are on the bad side of the luck and a certain amount of time if you're on the good side of the luck, keeping in mind that you are in the country, but you're not in the middle of nowhere country. As I said, when you were sneaking back behind the house, you can see the neighbor. You know what I mean? It's right there. So it's not like you have a mile around in every direction or whatever, half a mile around, you know, that deep country. So I'm going to go ahead and roll this luck roll, and we'll see how it all plays out. But you know, when you see those lights on, that there's a chance somebody might be calling the police.
Okay. go back in the house and see, does he have any like DVDs of like Scarface or any like Godfather movies or anything? Any?
Go ahead and roll a luck roll.
Okay, just a D Hondo.
Let's see if this guy. Yeah, D Hondo.
50.
50 is a success. So yes, he's got a copy of The Godfather.
All right, so he'll pop it in the TV, turn it on, blast the volume up, and fast forward to a scene where there's lots of gunfire.
Okay.
And just have it like blaring, and he'll open the door a little bit so that the sound travels outside, but then also the dialogue afterwards travels outside.
Okay.
Just do that for a little bit, and then maybe close the door a little bit more so that the sound of the movie keeps going, but it's not, it's not going to be all gunfire. The movie isn't all gunfire. Then he's like, did you empty his pockets?
Sure. Yeah. I will end the time.
Yep.
All right. We got to make sure this thing doesn't come back. And he takes the ice axe and chops at Riker's head.
Jesus.
To Jesus sever Christ. It from his body.
It's definitely dead now.
Roger. Oh my God. For fuck's Roger. Sake.
It's the only way.
The only way. We're not getting out of it. We're too out in the open.
We gotta move fast. You gotta keep your cool. This kind of shit happens all the time.
I think we have to destroy the scene.
Yes, but first we gotta take his head, his feet, and his hands. We'll dispose of them someplace else. No dental records, no prints. They'll have DNA, but we're gonna burn the place down. It's our only chance.
Geordi runs into the kitchen and grabs garbage bags. And rubber gloves, too, if there are any.
That's good. That's good.
And the doctor's like, Roger. And then she holds out her hand for the axe. Because she is a trained surgeon.
Yeah.
All right, I'll hold the arm. And he holds it, pins the arm down. Just get above the wrist.
Yeah, and so the doctor will use her memories of her surgical rotation to... sever the hands as cleanly as possible.
Do the same thing with the feet. Toss them in the garbage bag. I'm tempted to do the same to Francis Wei.
Take the vest, the FBI vest. We got to take that too.
Yeah, take the FBI vest. Yeah. All of his identification. And then we need to do a quick sweep. I tell them like the neighbors may know what's going on. We do a quick sweep of the house. Go back upstairs and finish looking up there. And then. Pour kerosene all over their bodies and all over the house and burn it and leave.
And we take the camera and the computer.
Yes. And Geordi grabs one framed picture of a titmouse.
All right, Geordi. I'll go just Geordi on this one. Give me a sanity check for mutilating the bodies. Witnessing it done, putting body parts in bags. I'm going to give the doctor a free pass on this one just because she's a surgeon. I don't know. I think it's on the line because it's Riker's body, but...
I think I haven't had to operate on friends before.
And his head was
missing. This isn't operating. This is not trying.
She didn't have to look in his eyes when she cut off the hand because the head was already in the bag. So it right, might have been slightly right.
Good
easier.
Point. It's a good point.
Slightly easier.
49, one over my current sanity.
Oh, no.
Is that good?
Okay. No, that's bad.
Yeah.
So you take 1 point of sanity damage during this process of mutilating the corpses.
Yeah, when he comes to the room with the garbage bags, he sees them chop off. He's like, oh, God, fuck me.
Roger, you're bleeding.
Is that me? I'll be fine. I can walk.
Geordi, can you drive?
You got a cigarette? Yeah, I can drive.
So the doctor will... the plan is that once we're in the car, she'll try to like patch up Roger's wounds and her own wounds, and instruct Roger on helping her patch up her own wounds. But we got to get out of here
first. Yeah, and we just want to make sure that the place burns from the inside out as we leave.
Okay, so who's got the demolition skill?
Ooh.
Who's got the skill to make sure that you effectively burn a house down
over
a very short amount of time? Ooh, okay. Good. All right. Nice. That's good enough. That's good enough. That's okay. good enough to Great. Know how to effectively place the fire.
It's so crazy how well-rounded this team is.
Yeah, it really is.
So there's so much like, that we each can't do, but together yeah. we make a good team.
Do we just turn yeah. on the gas on all the ranges and open, oh, that's open a good, the oven?
Yeah, yeah. That's,
so that we get a nice implosion.
I think Matthew has a 40% demolition skill.
What are you talking about? I can neither confirm nor deny.
And we definitely want to make sure that the bodies catch fire first, so that like if there's anything left of them, they're not going to have fingerprints, dental records, and it'll be just charred remains. Mm-hmm. And then getting out of there might be tricky. So if my stealth is good enough, I could try and lead them out without being seen. But I don't know if you need me to roll for that or what.
Yeah, that, I think that'll definitely be a role. Right now, I'm trying to figure out the skill that's going to determine how long it took you to dismember the bodies, bag the body parts, set the fire appropriately, and get out of the house. I'm just trying to see what. I'm trying to figure out.
It takes four
what.
Minutes less than when the police will arrive.
Oh, that's just baby.
Pretty, that's just math off the top standard. Of my head.
Pretty standard. Okay.
Wait, was that back of the napkin math?
Okay, how about this? I like this idea. I'm going to take a little bit from our friends over at Blades in the Dark. I'm going to just make it. So the Roger was the man with the plan. He had the plan. You don't have to roll for the plan. You have to roll for the execution at speed and have it be done well. So I'm going to call it an athletics check, but I'm going to say it's a group athletics check, and everybody is rolling it. And if anybody fails, you take the highest number, whichever the three of you get, or the lowest number, I'm sorry, whichever the three of you get, that determines success or failure. But any fails, Roger is going to take sanity damage.
All right.
Since he's the leader of this hurry up cleanup operation.
So I'm rolling
right at my breaking point.
Against my athletics.
You already passed your breaking point.
I'm at my breaking point right now. I don't think we ever resolved what happens to it. Because it happens.
No, it happens after the operation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm at 59 sanity points, and that's my breaking. So,
yeah.
All right. Athletics.
For right now, you're keeping it together. For right now, you're keeping it together.
You want to roll, we haven't played in so long, it's under your number, right?
Yes, you want to roll under your number.
And am I rolling against my, I'm rolling against my score, or we're just taking
your
the lowest score?
Your athletics score.
Oh, 53 under 60.
Okay.
79 over 30.
Okay.
72 over 30.
Okay, so they're both like not keeping up with what you know, Roger, to be the urgency of this situation. And it's just and it pushes against you. And Blades in the Dark, they call it Blades in the Dark, they call it stress. Here, we take sanity damage. Mm-hmm. You take 1 point of sanity damage.
Okay.
Not too bad. Not too bad. 1 point of sanity damage, but you manage to do it extremely quickly. A matter of minutes. How are you getting out of the house?
Back door?
Back door, yeah.
The doctor takes off all of her FBI gear and stuffs it in the trash bag with the head and the head and the hands and feet. Just in
and
case
you guys
someone sees us. That way
and you guys
are
carrying the trash bags out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so boom, out the back of the house.
Oh my God!
So freaking pumped.
It's just so crazy because this is what separates this from a cop drama. Just like your basic cop drama.
Yeah, it's like cops aren't usually dismembering bodies to cover their trail.
Carrying out your friend's head, hands, and feet in a garbage bag.
Yeah.
Oh God, stupid mouse. All right, so you guys have these bags, you set the flames, and it's just like you see it start licking through the living room at an insane rate, and you push out the back door, and we just see the silhouette of the three of you against the flames as you disappear down quickly, trying to avoid being viewed by neighbors. You see the lights are on, and now you've lit a fire. So, like, now it's going to attract a ton of attention. Your car is 100 feet or so down the street, parked in the hidden in the darkness. It's at that moment we cut away. And we come out to the front of the house. All we can see is the barest sort of feeling of smoke. They're slowly rising in the window, but only because we, as viewers, know that that's what's going on in there. It's very hard to see. And that's when a car pulls up out front of the house.
Oh, what?
Slowly. It says Ranger on the side of it.
Oh, what?
This guy gets out of the car, stands up, looks at the house, has a look on his face like, what the? And then starts slowly moving toward it. And you left all the gas on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He starts slowly walking toward it. And let's zoom out and take a look at this dude. Who is this guy, Grant?
Who is he?
Who is
he? Oh, my God.
Before what? You, a wiry life figure stands adorned in a rugged forest green parka with the word Ranger emblazoned upon its right flank, directly underneath the shoulder blade. Stands about 5'9". Atop his ropey, coyote-like frame sits a handsome mustache face. Dirty blonde hair sticking out of the sides of a wide brim hat frames the face of a park ranger named Colby Holger Erickson, played by Minnesota's own Josh Hartnett.
Oh, that's amazing. Wait, Josh Hartnett is not 5'9".
No, he's doing the opposite of the get smart standing on apple crates type of thing. He's kind of lower in all the shots. I was going to pick Prince, but that was just too ridiculous to be cast as. But I needed a Minnesota famous person.
No, but tell us everything about this guy.
All right. Yeah. Well, he was previously a United States Fish and Wildlife Services expert tracker and biologist at Gooseberry Falls State Park, Minnesota. Now, he worked to protect threatened and endangered species, you know, your migratory birds, marine mammals, and imperiled animals and plants. Part of his job, his investigations documented violations of laws such as, the Endangered Species Act, Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and the Lacey Act. We all know the Lacey Act. I'll gloss over the details of that. But Colby solved crimes that range from international wildlife smuggling to unlawful migratory game bird hunting. And like all criminal investigators, I don't know what's so funny about this, but like all criminal investigators, you know, he collected evidence, interviewed witnesses, interrogated subjects, and conducted surveillance, planned raids, made arrests, and prepared cases for courts. All pretty standard stuff. He worked closely with federal, state, tribal, and other foreign law enforcement authorities, namely, and in particularly, honorably, with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police of Ontario.
I was going to ask if he ever worked with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Yes, specifically of the Ontario region. We don't talk about the rest of the provinces. But during the course of his work managing the fish, wildlife, and natural habitats of northern Minnesota, he observed a wild swing in the population of a relatively rare species of mollusk in Lake Superior. This rise in population had zero correlation to an increase in available food for the mollusks. And in investigating the case and the cause of this raise, he reached a water processing plant in Duluth, Minnesota, where he came into contact with an ancient evil that he couldn't comprehend. Seemed to be traced as he fled and gathered what information he could to the founding of the town in 1854. But that's a story for another time. Colby went to the University of Minnesota College of Biological Sciences, St. Paul campus. We have the Twin Cities there, but the St. Paul campus is the one for him. Achieving a BS in Ecology, Evolution, and Behavior, he gained a love for the outdoors during his time spent at the university's Field Biological Station and laboratories in the Itasca Wilderness Sanctuary in Itasca, Minnesota. He's connected to his college sweetheart, Marjorie Nelson, with whom he shares a one-bedroom apartment. She works as a dental hygienist and is going to night school with the dreams of one day becoming a DDS. She's cried herself to sleep every night since Colby took his new job at J Mountain Wilderness as a park ranger. Kind of a fly-by-night thing. His best friend, Carl Meyer, is the captain of his bowling league. They're both members of the Alley Cats. Last year, they achieved...
Last year, they achieved
fourth place, which was their best ever finish. They're proud of that one. Their relationship remains strong after he's moved to upstate New York. He was in outer state Minnesota before, but, you know, he just scooched by. He's also tightly bonded with his horse, Frigga, with whom he patrols the back trails of the J Mountain Wilderness. Finally, Colby wields a Marlin Model 1895 big bore lever action rifle chambered in 4570 government, loaded with Federal Premium Express 4570 300 grain trophy bonded bear claw with a range of about 300 yards, give or take. And on top is a Reaper IR thermal scope for nighttime hunting. Excellent for close encounters and is a wonderful rifle for bushing. That type of boar will just cut straight through twigs and bushes in your way. And it's really what kind of cleared out the West back in the day. But yeah, that's basically who's in front of you. Colby Holger Erickson.
Ladies and gentlemen, Colby Holger Erickson is pauses. Well done, Grant. Well done. Grant.
Dr. Westover feels like she instantly knows all of this about seeing you for the first time.
I know. You really do just, and just the name fits so well. Colby Erickson. I just love it. So this guy, we pause. We see this guy's entire backstory. Yeah. The captain of his bowling league. I mean, that is the best.
The Alley Cats.
Grant, you, my friend, have found a home in Delta Green. I mean, it allows you to shine, my friend. We pause, see this, and then this guy begins walking towards the house. Grant, go ahead and roll an alertness for me.
Okay. 37. Over 60? Let me get my sheet up. 37 over 50.
You mean under?
Under 50, yep.
37 under 50, you smell smoke.
Colby will pull up his Marlin 1859 lever rifle towards his shoulder, brace it against, and walk forward with his trigger finger, keeping discipline but ready to fire if need be.
Okay. You walk up to the door. Sorry, that's a question. You walk up to the door. What do you do from there? Once you smell smoke, you pull out your weapon, and then where do you go?
I'm going to the source of the smoke, which is from the house, presumably, correct?
Yep, so right up the steps to the front door?
Yep, and I'll immediately, with the back of my hand, touch the doorknob because I don't want to burn off the flesh on the usable part of my fingers. If I do burn anything off, I would like it to be on the unusable side of my hand.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you touch the back of the doorknob and you feel that it is not hot, but you do smell smoke. It's getting stronger and stronger as you get to the front door.
Just his ranger mode kicks in and he lowers his shoulder and puts all of his weight behind a slam to open the door if it is locked. If not, he'll open it.
Yeah, the door is not locked.
Okay.
And so you're just able to open it. You open up the door and you see in the living room, along the floor, and slowly going up the curtains in the middle of the room, a fire is blazing. You can see multiple bodies on the floor, one of which is decapitated, and the hands are cut off as well. You notice this immediately. You see everything else we saw last time. Bird pictures on the wall, TV blaring The Godfather, and you see fresh blood all over, but it's slowly being enveloped in flames. What do you do?
Throws his forearm up against his eyes to kind of hide himself from the heat and the smoke, and he pulls the bottom of his parka up over his mouth to keep himself from breathing in the acrid smoke that surrounds him. And he tries to commit everything he sees to memory in his mind, because with a 50 in survival from his time being a park ranger and dealing with forest fires all the time, he has a feeling that whoever did this had the skills to pay the bills. This was no amateur arsonist. This was an expert.
Yep.
So he'll get out of there now and just back out
the way he came.
Yep.
Okay. He comes back out the front door, just as to the left of the house, you guys are creeping through the woods between two houses, trying to get back to your car without being seen. So let's do some opposed checks. So opposed stealth checks versus alertness checks.
Oh man. Oh, yeah. Nice. 29 under 70.
Okay.
So I'm like a fucking cat. I'm already back in Manhattan.
All right, 29 under 70. What about the doctor?
Oh, Jesus. Come on.
I will tell you, my stealth score is 10.
Okay.
And I rolled a 70.
You can roll under that.
I rolled a 71.
Okay, so 71 over 10. And what about Jordy?
I can do better than that. Or in this case, worse. I rolled a 99.
Oh, oh no. My gosh.
Critical failure.
Okay. So really, I mean, the only chance you have is for him to roll a 100. So go ahead, Grant. Give us your opposed alertness roll.
Here it comes. 53 over 50.
53 over 50. This is interesting because it's a fail, but your stealths are also fails. So with his number being so much lower than yours, I'm going to say, you know, he doesn't see Roger, but Lyra's holding the bag. Who's holding the bag? Who's holding the bag? Is Roger holding the bag? Is there only one bag?
There was only one bag. I don't remember who was
holding. Okay. So if there's only one bag, let's say Roger's holding it, and he's basically invisible to Park Ranger Colby, but you see people sneaking away to the side. Does this make sense to you guys? Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Hey.
What do you mean? Like on the screen, or are you just talking in general?
I'm just talking in general.
Yeah.
Is this making sense to you that you at some point would have had to sneak around the back but then come back to the front to get to your car?
Right,
were you taking the most direct route to your car, or did I rush you into that?
No, skulking around.
No, I know you're skulking around, but were you like going to lay low in the woods behind the house for hours before going back to your car?
No, okay. No.
Yeah, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, so while you're moving to your car, your stealths are not good enough, and you see two figures, what looks to be a man and a woman, Colby, moving away from the house in an obviously shady manner toward the street, but moving away from the house. What do you do?
Freeze! Stop in your tracks right there! I got you dead in my sights! Don't you move!
Oh my god, does Roger hear this?
Yeah.
Like, turn back and see.
Uh-huh. You see one man, one car. No lights on, no sirens. There's no siren on the car. You probably don't see it says Ranger on it. You probably just see like the white front with maybe a green stripe on it, but no sirens or anything.
How close am I to our car?
Maybe 40 feet.
All right. Run, throw the bag underneath the car with the body parts, and come back around and be like, FBI! And point the gun at the ranger.
FBI, if you're FBI, I need to see identification. I'm happy to cooperate with you, but I need to see some ID.
Where'd you get a weapon like that, partner?
Who are these two? Are they FBI too?
Yes, those are my partners.
How do I get a weapon like that? Is that what you asked me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got it. Because my game is big game. It's some of the biggest game I've seen in quite some time, my friend. Looks at him straight down the sights through thermal. Even if he goes into like the blackest part of it, this white outline in the black.
A white outline of Roger Cumstone. I love it.
He's like, I'm reaching for my badge.
All right.
And he holds up his FBI badge.
Okay, pause as he's doing this. Grant, Colby knows this area. He knows it well. He knows Officer Martin Waltz. Martin Waltz is on duty, and he knows that if you heard the call, which you did, that he's a minute away, 2 minutes away, something like that. And you're not 100% supposed to be there. So you got that in your mind, too, as he holds up his badge. Continue.
All right. What's your name, Agent?
Agent Klaus von Cliff. These are my associates.
Von Cliff, I'm going to level with you right now.
Put your gun down, sir.
You put yours down first.
Dr. Westover will draw her gun and point it at the park ranger.
What the? Escalating it!
Jordy does, too. And Eve panics and just starts firing wildly. Empties the chamber. It's just like, dom, 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 dom.
You listen up, pal. We are in a couple of bears trying to steal a picnic basket.
Put
that gun down.
Here's what's going to happen.
Say Jellystone!
Here's what's going to happen, you three. I'm going to count to three, and at the same time, we're going to lower our weapons. All right? One.
Who are you?
Two.
Who are you to give us orders?
One. Fires at her feet. Don't talk to me that way.
The doctor fires back.
Do you know the crime?
Not at the feet, not at his feet.
Fire fight. Oh, my God. All right. Roll firearms, doctor. Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Miss Wadley.
Nope.
Crit.
I crit.
Oh. I crit, too. 66 oh, no. Under 70.
33 under 41.
Oh, my God. All right. Everybody slow the hell down. What is happening?
More guns.
What is your range, by the way, and how far away are we? Because you may be outside of the range of your pistol.
I assume that if you were stopping us and then if Roger came in sight, we're all kind of at close range.
Yeah, I'm farther away.
Yeah, you're in reasonably close range. The house next door is pretty close, so they'd have to be like in another house for you to be. That's why it was so easy for you to see them, because they were close by.
I can't believe you fired at the foot of a FBI officer.
It's true. FBI agent. It's true. He did. Man.
Yeah, that's true. Grant. You were aiming. You crit the ground in front
Everybody's
of me.
Everybody is losing their cool.
You were aiming for the ground, right?
All right. Here's what happens. You fire, Grant, and I'm just going to say it's so crazy that you just shot. But I'm going to give that to you as an advantage. So you shot, which is just shocking. And from there, everybody gets their heads together and Westover decides to aim up. So let's talk about initiative. You, Colby, have an 11, and the doctor has a 12, I believe. She has got a 12. So her shot comes out first. Even as your crit comes out, hers lands first. So, doctor, what do you got? Do you have a 1d10? Is that what you got?
Yeah, we all have medium pistols, right?
Medium pistols. Yeah. That's what it was assigned as last time. And is that, how does Kevlar come into this, too? That's the other question. I always forget about this. This is kind of our first real firearms battle.
Well, Kevlar, it acts like DR. So what is your, what's the Kevlar rating? I think it's 3.
Yeah.
I think it's an armor rating of three. Yeah, so you're just going to deflect 3 of this damage, but with a 2d10, I mean, this could be a single shot kill.
Just 1d10. 1d10.
Yeah, but you're but doubling it because it's a crit.
Oh, right.
I mean, this is an insanity.
Okay.
Insanity.
I rolled 9 damage. A 2 and a 6
seven. Points of damage.
So 6 points of damage he takes. But that means, I mean, was Jordy firing as well?
Yeah, I think if Lyra fires, then he fires. He's not going to hit, but he fires too. Yeah, 59. Over.
He fires, misses. So now, I mean, everybody is seeing this. You are right in front of somebody else's house. What about Roger Cumstone? What does he do?
So he sees this guy get hit. Can I talk as a free action and then decide if I want to take an action?
Yeah.
Basically?
You put that motherfucking gun down right now. We're FBI, goddammit! You're gonna get worse in your head if you don't drop it.
Breathe heavily.
Yeah, you've taken a hard, hard shot, man.
But hang on. I wouldn't have fired if Grant, if he didn't fire. So is that not, is that just because initiative?
Fired at your feet. I fired at
no,
your
no,
feet.
No, he fired as the surprise feet. Round.
Okay.
And then the next round started, and his initiative was 1 point lower than yours.
Got it. I understand.
But Roger's initiative is higher, so.
Got it. Sorry.
Yeah, Roger just lays out a threat.
All right. All right, I put it down. Knows he's lost, knows he has three agents, what he thinks are agents in front of him, all trained in firearms, at least as well as he is. Even if he has the firepower and advantage otherwise, if it was one-on-one, he would kill whoever was against him, but three against one, he's going to count his blessings and stop. I'm just here looking for someone. I'm here looking for someone that's very important. What I am doing is very, very important.
Well, we'll be the judge of that. Come with me. Grab him. Put him in the car.
Muscle him over to the fucking car.
The doctor like puts her gun on his neck and like grabs his one arm.
Yeah. Jordy's like fumbling for the keys, like trying to open the driver's side door.
Get to the car. Open the trunk. Throw him in.
Oh my
grab
God,
the yeah. The back full of body parts.
Oh my
take
God.
Off. Yeah. Shields up.
The wheels screeching as the car takes off. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's so amazing. Oh my God. Can we please just for a moment? I don't want to go back. I don't want to do any other details. I don't want to check anything else. I just want to say in that moment when he laid his gun down, the doctor put a gun to his head. They rushed him to a car, threw him in the, cuffed him, threw him in the truck, and Roger threw a bunch of body parts in with him and next to him. And they just peel out. Oh my God. They peel out down the road.
And gravel flying everywhere.
Gravel flying everywhere. His car is out. His car, by the way, is left out front. And about, oh man, about 20 seconds later, just the gas ignites from the stove that was left on, and the house explodes into shards and then flame. And you just hear woo, 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 as the sheriff's department comes screeching up the street. But you guys are long gone.
And you know what's amazing? They're going to think the ranger blew up inside of the building. Now it's so amazing.
Yeah, the ranger's car is there.
Oh my God, it's so amazing.
Like he left his gun outside and then just walked in and the place exploded.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm going to wake up my kids. Oh, oh, it's so amazing. I don't know what to. I think it's safe to say I never saw this coming. Oh my God. All right, so we black out on that.
I'm replaying it in my head, remembering that it took place next to a house that was blazing and about to explode.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God. Put down your weapon. Put down your weapon. We're FBI. Oh my God, it's so funny. It's
the Godfather's
so
blazing.
All right, we fade up. We don't fade up on much of anything. A black screen. Maybe we can see some edges of structure. A bend here, a fold there. And we hear the labored breathing of a wounded park ranger. And we hear, of this car just driving on the highway, and he hears the murmuring as conversation is going on in the cab. What is the conversation in the cab of the car?
Who's driving, Jordy?
I'm Jordy. I'm driving.
I'm Jordy.
I'm Jordy.
I'm Jordy.
It's getting real.
I think I'll be trying to patch up Roger, and then once I get that done, like giving him instructions on how to patch up me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And how do you do that with your surgeon skill?
Or it would probably be medicine, right?
Medicine. Yeah, that'll work. Medicine will work.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's high enough, of course. I mean, you're a doctor. You get this done. And you guys are Jordy, patching each other up, but you can't avoid the fact that there's blood in the car. You know, you just can't avoid the fact.
We also have a park ranger and a bunch of Riker Salas' body parts in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on.
But you get out clean. You're on 87 South. You think whatever happened back there is behind you. What's the conversation in the car?
Who the fuck is this guy? Why did he show up? What did he want? What are we going to do with him? Got a fucking park ranger in the back seat. I don't know what the fuck we're gonna do. We're supposed to be covering this stuff up. We're uncovering. We gotta start covering that uncovering.
Well, we could dump him somewhere, destroy the evidence, and get going. Or, I mean, I shot him already. What are we? Am I supposed to patch him up and then? There's too many loose ends.
I don't know. Maybe he's a forgiving type.
I'd say what happens to him is up to him.
All right. Pull over somewhere, isolated, and we'll see what he wants to do.
All right. Yeah.
So yeah, Jordy pulls off onto a side road.
All of a sudden, you feel it. We go back into the trunk. The car, and then you just sort of feel it. You can feel the car velocity slowing down as it comes to a stop, and you hear click, 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 click of a turn signal. The car pulls off of the interchange, gets to a suitably dark and deserted place, and you hear as it rolls over gravel and then comes to a stop. You hear click, click as car doors open, two car doors close, and then shh, trunk gets opened.
Imagine Roger's really strong, so he just grabs him with one hand, pulls him out, and throws him down on his knees in just the light of the headlights.
Yeah. Like an open bullet wound, and just throw him down on the road.
You're just like blinded against the light.
How you feeling there, Ranger?
Oh, I've been better. I've been much better, gosh darn it.
I'm going to approach you to take a look at your wound.
All right.
But if you try anything, my two fellow agents here are going to blow your fucking brains out.
Oh, for crying out loud, just take a look. You have the advantage here.
Lyra will hand her pistol to Roger just in case the ranger tries to make a grab for it.
Yeah, Roger does like a gangsta cross fists with both pistols. Really.
And then she will approach the ranger and kind of do a medicine check to kind of examine his wound and see if he's bleeding out.
Same thing as what you did with Roger. You can tell he's in danger and you can patch him up briefly, but he will have to see someone to suture the wound and get the bullet out. The bullet is still in there, unfortunately. So you know he's got a matter of hours. Unless you can do it.
I mean, I could, but it would be, I don't want to do it in the middle of the woods. So we'd have
it
to
was
find
a, it was a crit.
Yeah,
so the bullet did not cleanly go through his side.
What were you doing at that house?
Listen, all my cards are on the table now. I was looking for someone. Went missing. Off the J Mountain Trail. Rode in on the hiker's list. goes by the name of Francis Way.
Went missing? When?
A couple weeks ago, I guess. Ow! That hurts! Ah!
That's me sticking my finger in the bullet wound.
Roger, that hurts.
Roger, please.
Sorry. Old habits die hard.
I found a body next to another body in a murder scene and was trying to narrow down who it could be. The remains were unidentifiable. I went through everyone else on that list. Most of them, anyway. And I, heard a alert call on my radio, my scanner, that matched his address. So I head down there to see what happened. Lo and behold, I find you three coming out of there. I'm sorry for firing at you. I never should have did that. I got nervous.
You're dealing with something you can't possibly understand.
You don't know the half of it.
Dr. Westover, after patching him up as best she can, kind of walks back over to Geordi and Roger and kind of pulls him aside and whispers that the bullet's still in there. I patched him up as much as I could, but he doesn't see a doctor soon. He's not going to make it.
I know a veterinarian in the city. Probably use his place. But that's a couple hours away still.
Right? Wait. Yeah, we're at least 4 hours. Do you think we have 4 hours, Doc?
Yeah. You've given him some time. He's got 4 hours.
Well, the way I see it, he fired at us, FBI agents. We're going to take him to a vet, get him stitched up. Maybe he'll let us call it even. He knows what the alternative is.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to kill a Parks and Wildlife ranger. I certainly didn't sign up for that. Just give it a shot, get him better, and I don't know.
I'm wary of bringing him all the way to the city, though.
Yeah, I know, but he seems kind of like a little loopy, too, you know? Something else is going on with this guy. See what he left when he said that he is dealing with stuff he had no idea what it was? You hear that laugh? That seemed familiar to you somehow.
What are you saying, Geordi?
I don't know. Maybe it's just my gut. Maybe it's just my Hugo Nebula award-winning writerly instincts, but it seems like he maybe has been exposed to a little bit of what we've been exposed to, especially given why he said he was there in the first place.
Wonder if there's a way to get him to open up without us tipping our hand.
Well, my guy, the veterinarian, he might be able to give us a little bit of sodium pentothal as well. I'm just saying, you know.
Let me ask you this question.
And not for nothing, but I still got some angel dust left.
Is he a good vet?
No, he's a terrible vet. He's a mob tie guy, you know.
I can do the surgery if we can get to a facility.
You could do the surgery. It's just like he's got a clean table, you know, that you can use and tools.
All right.
I think it's a good option.
Give him the... We'll present it to him. Give him the choice. We can let him go here, or he can take his chances with us.
All right. Hey, Fargo. So you got two choices, all right? You can keep your mouth shut, ride with us all the way into the city. I know a guy. He's got a place. We can fix you up. My friend here is an excellent doctor, all right? Your other choice, option B, we leave you here in the woods and you bleed out in the middle of nowhere. Now, I know which I'd choose, but I'm going to leave it up to you.
Oh. I'll take option A. And he faints and falls off the side of his knees.
Okay. It's worse than you thought, Doc.
All right, keep putting him in the back seat. I'll have to keep him alive as we drive down to the city.
Okay.
Right. Let me check on the body parts. Did any of them like fall out of the bag and rumble around with him in there?
The foot, like, it's loose, like on his head.
The spin cycle.
Yeah. Riker's head is like.
Yeah. Now, the body parts are all still in the bag, undisturbed. Where does the ranger go?
He's gonna have to be in the back seat.
Does he sit in the back seat? Yeah. The third row.
Yep.
Goes in the third row. I think I misrepresented the trunk, by the way, of a GMC Yukon. You would have been able to see streetlights and stuff like that, but let's not overthink.
But maybe they had the little thing that covers up your groceries and the things in the bag.
What's it called?
It's just a shade. It's like a horizontal shade over your shit. But I don't know what the name is.
Yeah, I know. I'm blanking on it right now. All right, so you load them up in the car, and let's fast forward 4 hours. It's now about 2:30 in the morning, and you are coming down into the city. You want to go straight into the city, right? Not to the Motel 6 in Jersey, because you're going right to the veterinarian's place in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
No, Brighton Beach.
Oh, so you got to go all the way down to the bottom of Brooklyn. All right,
we got to go to Brooklyn.
5.5 hours. 5.5 hours. He asked me if he had 4. He dies somewhere around the Williamsburg Bridge.
Yeah, there's not a lot of mob connected vets in Manhattan. I'm sorry. We got to go.
Times have changed.
It's true.
You drive Giuliani,
and I mean, for people that don't know New York, you literally drive to the farthest possible point that's in New York City from upstate New York, Brighton Beach.
I give him an extra shot of morphine and an amphetamine to keep his heart going.
Little angel dust for sweetening.
You get down there, and it's the middle of the night. You manage to smuggle him into this house. Jordy, you call ahead. You make arrangements for this, and the veterinarian is going to let you use his table, his sterile supplies, for the doctor to actually do the job. Doctor, you need to roll surgery to see if you can get the bullet out.
So my surgery, I'm a very good doctor, but I'm not a surgeon. So I just want to make that clear.
Oh, I thought you were. I thought you had.
I have some surgery.
What is your surgery?
20.
Oh no!
It was just a rotation. I'm not a surgeon.
The good news is the vet can have a go at it if you fail.
This guy is a mob. Like, he's bullet wounds, he can do for sure. Yeah. That's his main thing that he does. So
okay, great.
All right, so I'll work with the mob vet, and should I roll first and then the mob vet, or work together?
Well, sure. You guys can work together. I'll improvise this. I'll say the mob vet's got a 60 in surgery, and if I roll a success here, I'll up your score to 40. And you got to get under under 40. Oh, my God. 100.
Oh, jeez.
No.
0000.
The vet.
So you show up, and he is hammered. Completely. Wait, I'm not even kidding. Look at that. 0000.
Oh, my God.
He's completely wasted. It was his brother-in-law's bachelor party. No, that's not right. That's not right. This is brother-in-law's buddy's bachelor party. And he just got trashed tonight. He's absolutely wasted when you show up. Completely useless. Can't help you. Now you have all of his equipment. Can Doctor you do the job to save Grant's character's life? Or does he have a one-episode arc?
Grant is so angry.
Yeah, because I...
All right. There's no way he's going to save her. So is there anything else we could do?
Can I deputize Jordy and Roger as my nurses and help have them help me in the surgery.
Do you guys have any medicine skill? Roger, do you have field wound sort of stuff? Do you have any skill in medicine?
I have an 80 medicine.
I have survival, but I don't think that quite works the way I want it to work.
I have an 80 medicine. I feel like I should be able to stabilize him.
You could also just leave him outside of a hospital.
Right, right, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying you're trying to cure him. I'm not saying if you fail the surgery check, he dies on the spot. I'm just saying you would have to take him to a hospital if you want him to live.
Yeah.
If you fail. He's not definitely dead.
Yeah, I got first aid, but surgery is for a severe wound. Medicine ensures long-term recovery. So this is a surgery check.
This is surgery, dude.
So this is to removing a bullet. Hospital.
You're like a general practitioner, like preventative care doctor, not like a ICU ER doctor.
Well, no, that's exactly what I am. I'm an ICU ER doctor, but I'm not a surgeon.
How? Yeah. Well, because
it's a different specialty, Grant.
It is. It
Haven't
is
you ever watched ER?
I would trust Matthew with this. He's watched a lot of television.
Okay.
They have a lot of trauma surgeons, but I'm not a trauma surgeon. I'm an emergency medicine specialist.
Okay.
Grant's looking it up because he doesn't believe me.
No,
it's not going to affect my rolling at all. But like, I return to my other question: is there any way that having them as my assistants and nurses can give me a bonus to the roll?
Yeah. So roll your first aid, Roger. And if you succeed, we'll give you a plus 20% on your skill. And same thing with you,
Skid.
There you go.
Free on first aid.
I failed on first aid.
All right.
Okay, so you get a plus 20. Again, so now you're at a 40% is your skill. You got to get under 40. Jordy gave you a chance.
17.
Oh, yes! I thought
so you made it clean.
Dude, amazing. So you just see. I mean, slow-mo is like... I'm just going to stop the music as in like... I hate this mouse. As in, like, complete silence. Just everything stops. And she eases this bullet out of the wound. It's like completely clean. No fragments left. The bullet is out. Amazing. And you all collectively breathe a sigh of relief. Now your medicine skill can kick in, and at 80, you know you can patch him up and he'll be fine. But the question is, how long is he going to stay here? What does he have to tell you? Where do you go from here as lead investigator, Agent Aiden Knorr is waiting to hear from Riker Salas, who no one knows yet is dead. No one has communicated with Eileen Parker, your handler from Delta Green on this job. I mean, you're back in New York City, but there are so many unanswered questions, and that's where we'll pick it up next time.
Oh my God. This mission is so far from over.
I'm so bad.
You kidnapped me. You're a park ranger.
Oh. You threw a park ranger from upstate New York in a car.
You shot him. Shot him and threw him in a car full of body parts.
This game is amazing.